Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, December 7th. I'm Ray Graff. Rich Guthrie is with us today to answer your burning, birding questions. It's always a popular show when Rich is here. Birds are very popular. They're one of the most popular hobbies in the entire world already. If you have a bird question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email your bird questions to voxpop@wamc.org. We do like when you send pictures via the email. However, nobody in Radioland can actually see them. But if you wish, whatever. Number again is 800-348-2551. It's Rich Guthrie. It's Blades. It's you. It comes up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff, Birds Today, and we welcome back our resident avian expert, Rich Guthrie. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He's a former board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Hey, you got a birding question? Call 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Once again, the number, though, 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, welcome back. Happy holidays, sir.
Hey, yeah. Hi, Ray. Good to be back.
That was very enthusiastic.
Well, hi, Ray. Wow, it sure is great to be back.
Nah, go back to blasé, Rich. Hi, Ray. Hey, it's Christmas bird count time.
It is. Here we are. And this is actually one of the real highlights in the grayest, darkest seeming time of the year weather-wise, you know.
Yeah.
Short days, long nights, cold weather, snow, ice, all that. Bird counts.
Yeah.
We look forward to that. This has been going on for 122 years, something that the National Audubon Society is behind.
Do you know why they wanted to start it in the first place 122 years ago?
Yeah, back then it was a great idea to replace a very bad idea.
What was the bad idea?
The bad idea was it was a country folk thing. Is after on Christmas, for the guys and gals, I presume, I'm not sure, but they go out with their guns and shoot as many different birds and animals as they can. And the game was to come back with as many dead things as you can bring to the front door.
Good Lord.
I know.
I've not heard about this one.
Oh, it's terrible.
And, you don't see that on the Hallmark Channel Christmas shows, I'll tell you that.
No, you don't. And, you know, the pile of stuff out in the front. And what? A group of guys, about a dozen of them or so, came up with the idea, let's not shoot them, let's just talk about them, let's just share.
Yeah.
And it quickly replaced that ugly thing, and it became the beautiful thing that it is, and it is a beautiful thing. I look forward to it. It's a time when, you know, not so much during the COVID business, but before then when you got together with people that maybe you only saw once a year at this time. It was, and you get to go out.
And freeze.
Well, that's part of the, you know, that you're not if you're in South Florida, you know.
I suppose.
But up here, it's not usually not that bad. We've had rough days, that's for sure. But, you know, it's also a time to go back into places that you haven't been in for the last year and check things out, see how things are going, and find some old friends in the bird world.
That's very great. So how do people find out more? How do people get involved?
Well, there's, you know, I did a rough count. In our listening area, there's about 44 different Christmas bird counts that are going to come up between now. Actually, they begin next Tuesday, December 14th, and end on January 5th. I mean, the count period, they don't go out on Christmas Day so much anymore. Maybe some do, but most of them do not. And so they allow it for occur in this count period. There are 44 different counts that are going on in our listening area, and each one is centered on a in a circle that's 7.5 miles in diameter, a rule that was set up probably about 1918, for all I know.
But the Audubon Society coordinates all of these circles?
Yes. They sanction them, more or less, and they sponsor them. They also publish the results of these counts. And that's where the important stuff begins to come in.
Interesting.
And, you know, over 122 years, begin to learn a few things about changes that have been going on And some of them are rapid changes in the last few years. So it's a great idea to keep monitoring them out there.
Now, were there rapid changes? I mean, have you looked at some of these records from 120 years ago of the bird counts and then maybe check them 110 and see how quickly things changed back then?
Yes. In fact, I put together a little chart, and others have as well, of their local count. And you could see the line that, as it swoops up with some bird species just kind of like increasing megatropolously, and other ones just kind of like falling off. And where'd they go? We don't see them anymore. But for the most part, yeah. So in order to get in on them, here's the ticket.
Yeah.
Audubon.org.
Audubon.org. Do
That's
you have to
correct.
Be a member to do
no,
this?
No. You don't have to be a member. But what you do is you go to there, and you can click down, and you'll find a map of all of these circles and where they are and where you live and relative to that. And if you're in one of these circles, you're golden. If you're not, you get a commute over to where one is.
And, what if I lived next door to Rich Guthrie?
And?
Let's just say in your worst nightmare, I lived next door to Rich Guthrie.
It'd be a lucky day.
He's outside feeding. The birds are on his head. He's out sitting quietly, and he's counting birds.
He said,
now, what if I was next door and I was counting birds? We're counting the same birds.
We'll collaborate.
How do you avoid the duplicates?
Well, we usually don't run into that because the compiler, the local guru, the leader.
And that's you, right?
Well, it wouldn't be me. I used to be the local compiler, but I've sort of taken a passenger seat, and the front row passenger seat. The effort is to avoid that kind of overlap and duplication. So they divide up this circle, this 15-mile diameter circle, into groups, and the groups go out with their three or four people, one or two people, six or seven people, and they don't, they, you know, they look to the left, they don't look to the right, or that kind of thing.
Yeah. Really?
How
scientific.
Yes,
okay,
right.
All right, listen, we'll find out more about that, and we'll remind people toward the end of the show about that again. This email came in a couple hours ago from Tim in the 845. Finch feeder question for Rich Guthrie. I've always had an upside-down bird feeder to feed finches. A bear smashed my last one. I got a new one, but the finches are not going near it. How can I attract finches? I'm using Niger seed. By the way, the upside down bird feeder for them, it's amazing. They are the only bird who can eat upside down. And that's from Tim in the 845.
I'm not quite sure I understand the question.
Really, it's going to be one of those shows.
Let's start. A finch is feeding on an upside down bird feeder, used to feed there, but no longer feeds there.
Right.
The bear took the original one out.
Exactly. Wow. This is kind of like an SAT. Your comprehension is excellent. The bear smashed my last one. I got a new one. The finches are not going near this one.
Maybe it's got a bad smell. I don't know. No.
You want to read that again?
We'll try it out. I would turn it back upside right. Maybe the birds, you know, said this is dangerous territory with bears roaming around, ripping apart bird feeders.
Is this really true, though, that the finch is the only bird that will eat upside down?
Well, no. Lots of birds will eat upside down. And nuthatches are notorious for that. And the Lewis's woodpecker. I've got a great photograph of a Lewis's woodpecker upside down on a bird feeder.
Okay, how does a bird do that?
They just hang upside down.
I mean, they hang by their talons.
Some are better than others at that.
Very interesting.
Most of them don't do that. But in any event, finches should have no problem with an upside right bird feeder.
Okay, try that.
Try that. And the upside down one, I'm not quite sure how that works.
I mean, are the finches maybe gone from Tim's backyard now?
I don't think so. The goldfinches and the house finches, they should still be around, and they're looking forward to the next meal.
Let me ask you a question before we hit the break. And by the way, the number to talk to Rich Guthrie is 800-348-2551. Phones are coming up next, 800-348-2551. Is there a finch-like bird, a little bird, maybe like a Carolina wren, one of those type birds, that is almost like a blue jay in appearance?
That looks like a blue jay?
Yeah.
Maybe the titmouse. The titmouse is kind of like blue-gray.
Yeah.
And it has a little crest on the head like a blue jay.
That's it.
And it's about the size of a little bigger than a chickadee.
Do they like to just hang kind of low to the ground in bushes?
Yeah. And they also hang upside down at bird feeders.
Oh, cut it out. Let's take a break. Rich Guthrie is our guest. He's irascible today, folks. Good luck if you call 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Oh, that's nice. That's funky. Little known fact of the drummer on this one, Art Bernstein, is a real Bird fan, and he listens to this program. That's Chuck DeLoya on guitars and bass, and Art on drums, and he's a, you know, Art's a big Rich Guthrie fan.
Well, Al,
Chuck's never heard of Rich.
Art, you do a great job there.
The number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. I know you have a list of things, but Diana and Hoosick has been waiting a really long time, so we'll get to your list momentarily, and let's go to Diana now. Hello.
Hello, Rich. Hello, Ray.
Hi.
I got this question I hope you can help me with today.
Okay.
Here it is. Here I am in Hoosick. I'm looking in my theaters, and the question, it's suet. When I look at what that stuff is made of, I think, is this the right thing to do? I mean, I love the showcase species that it brings, but I got to ask you, Rich, suet, do you do it or do you not?
Do you do it? Do you sue it?
Do you do it? Yeah, you do. And the reason why is it's, you know, it's full of that stuff that Doc says for us to stay away from. And but it's good for the birds.
Really?
And the reason for that is it's full of energy. It's got a lot of calories in there and fat energy. And that's what the birds need these cold nights. And it's actually very good for them.
I feel like a drug dealer, though, like it's Avian crack. They love it much. And I just feel like a pusher.
Well, they love you for it. And
right.
Take it personally. So,
Diana, the worst you'll get is probation. So just go with the flow.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to do it. With suet, I'm going to stick with it. I don't have to feel bad.
No, don't feel bad. Feel real good about it. So
do it with suet. Diana, thanks for the call. Happy holidays. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. And we go to Richmond, Virginia. Stuart, you're on.
Hi, Rich.
Hi.
Hi, I met you at Tuckahoe Creek Park about a week ago.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
You remember?
A great place. Hi.
Yeah. Yeah, so I thought I'd check out your show and give you a question.
Fair enough.
I think I asked you when we met down there, but what's the best place for me to catch some snowy owls, East Coast this month? Any hot spots or place I might winter that I could... It's good for a photographer to get a bunch of shots.
Well, here's the thing. Yes. And being as you're down in Virginia, I would head over to the Outer Banks, the coast.
Oh, it's such a great place.
Head on out there. Chincoteague or Assateague or on the Delmarva Peninsula. And the reason for that is snowy owls. First of all, this is the year for snowy owls. They're showing up beautiful, beautiful birds. And they're actually stunning for to see out there. They like the open sand dunes of the Outer Banks, the seashore, because I suppose it reminds me of the Arctic tundra where they're from. And but the thing is, and I'm sure you're aware of this, and I wish more people were, is that they encroachment. They need to rest. They need the time to take a to take a break.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they're so attractive and people are so drawn to them that they kind of like move in too close and they stir the thing up and it has to move and it gets bumped from place to place and they need the rest. So long lens, a nice, bright, overcast day ought to do the trick out there on the bank. And the other thing is open fields like an airport or a golf course or...
You're gonna stand at an airport and watch for birds.
Well, you can if you know the Albany County Airport in Albany, New York usually harbors a snowy owl each winter or so. If you go out there by the perimeter road, you could look in over the tarmac area.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Stuart, you want to follow up?
I did an alert on eBird and I've been looking at where some have been spotted and some were in Cambridge, Maryland area and stuff. So do you think they might be making their way?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They keep going till they stop. And
where do they stop?
Like where they want.
Like a Stuckey's on the side of the road?
And yeah, so give it a go and check out those open areas and snowy owls, beautiful birds. And this is a year for, they're very cyclical. When, you know, this is one of those studies where you can follow where the food crop up north, the lemmings up north, they circulate, go up and down and periodically, and the snowy owl populations follows right along with
interesting.
That.
Interesting. That's great. Stuart, thank you for calling from Richmond, man. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot. And thank you, Rich. Good talking to you again.
Thanks so much. Number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, he's famous across the land. Let's go to V in Albany. V, you're on.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have a blue jay that lives in the backyard. He likes the trees in the backyard. I put a feeder in the front yard so I can see him come out the front window. But he doesn't seem to like the feeder. I have one that's hanging on a shepherd's hook that's in a cage so he can peck through and get the seeds. I don't think he likes that one because I think he's too big and he gets, you know, sort of spinning around. And then the feeder is sort of at the bottom of a large tree. So there's a canopy because I read that they're kind of skittish and they like to be under a canopy. But I'm getting more squirrels at the feeder than I'm getting my blue jay.
Well, what I recommend is if he's, first of all, they like to feed on the ground. They're very happy feeding on the ground. And cracked corn works very well for them. I like cracked corn because they like it and it's cheap. So, and they're drawn right to it. You know, they'll go for the cracked corn right next to the, you know, the nutritious black oil sunflower seeds. And the other thing is if you have peanuts. They're really puppy dogs when it comes to peanuts. They love those things. Try those.
Peanuts and cracked corn. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. A baseball game might break out there.
You could cheer them on.
Cracker Jack.
And you can, I have blue jays that watch for me. I put out a peanut on the railing on my porch rail, and they'll come right down and practically at my fingertips. They wait for me, and they kind of get out of the way. They're coming in.
Hey, so, V, do you know that the birds literally perch on Rich Guthrie at his house?
I can only imagine, I'm sure.
Well, yeah. So,
well, anyway. Do you recommend raw peanuts, roasted peanuts?
I buy the bag of peanuts in the shell. And you know what? You know, I think it makes them feel like they're getting a little more for the buck. And and it also keeps them busy. Gives them something to chew on.
All right. Well, good luck, V. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Couple of emails here, and then we'll go back to the phones. This one's from Pamela. Over the years, I've noticed that pigeons seem to congregate in certain places, a particular stretch of wire, but not a similar area of wire nearby. On one particular roof, but not the similar roof next door. They seem to favor these locations year-round, so I don't think it's just that roof. Isn't as well insulated, so is warmer on a winter day. The birds are seen in these particular locations all the time. Has anybody studied why they choose one spot over another? And that's from Pamela and Troy. Great question.
Well, pigeons, and they're great birds to study. We, you know, kind of dismiss pigeons as being, you know, the feathered rats or stuff like that. You know, those pejorative names that we give them, but they're actually quite beautiful. And intriguing to watch, beautiful flying birds. But in any event, they're gregarious. They are a bird that likes to stay in a flock. When they fly around, they have a beautiful formation in the sky, and they also like to live together. So they pick a spot, and if it works, why break it? Why fix it?
Yeah.
They pick a spot, and they're faithful to that spot, and they'll keep coming back. You know, you'll oftentimes see pigeons out remote areas out on along the interstate highway, miles from the city and the suburbs. And what it is that they found a bridge, an overpass bridge, that they happen to like, and they're going to be faithful to that bridge.
Very
interesting. As long as the conditions don't change drastically for them.
I think pigeons are smart. I don't think they're rats.
No.
I think seagulls are rats.
Let's talk about that sometime.
Winged rats of the deep.
We got something to say about that in a minute.
Oh, really?
Yes, right, sir.
Let's go to Jay in Stockbridge and try to put that off. Jay, you're on.
Oh, good. I need your help. I drive almost every day down a dirt road about a mile long, and almost at the exact place in the morning I am attacked by a ruffed grouse.
Oh, good for you.
I drive along. He's flapping his wings against my window. He wants in, but I'm not letting him in, and he's angry, and I'm confused.
Well,
what's
don't
up?
Be. And don't – yeah. It's not you. It's the truck. So ruffed grouse, that's a very peculiar thing. Unfortunately, we're not seeing as many grouse as we used to. They're being displaced probably by turkeys as turkey numbers are increasing. But in any event, I miss the ruffed grouse. But they're prone to do that. They have this propensity to be attracted to motor engines.
Really?
I know. Lawnmowers or power saws or tractors or your truck.
Interesting.
And it's mysterious. I've had them fly alongside my car for a good 300 yards. And then finally, you know, and I kept the pace with them and they kept the pace with me parallel. So,
well, this one is literally flapping his wings against my window as if he wants in.
So let him in.
Yeah, right. No.
I might. I just might.
No, don't do that. I think it's all about the truck. He's actually, I think it's something they pick up. You know, their territorial defense is a sound. They make this mechanical sound with their wings. And I think that...
Yeah, that drumming.
Yeah, the drumming. And I think there's something about the engine that resonates with that mechanism in their head.
Maybe that's indicative that you need to tune up on the truck, Jay. Maybe the timing belt or
something. Well, no, because I told my guys about it. They thought I was out of my mind until... About 3 days later, one of them is driving to work, and he gets attacked by a grouse. He spilled his coffee, almost went off the road. So he made a believer out of me. So anyway.
Don't take it personally, but but I miss that. I miss them grouse.
Why don't you go to Stockbridge and roll the window down?
You know, I'm tempted to.
Yeah. All right, Jay, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Really fascinating about the really rough grouse. I mean.
Yeah. And it happens, and they are so tenacious at times. So, and it looks cute, but you have to wonder, what are they thinking?
Yeah.
What if they do if they catch that car?
Yeah.
Then what?
Well, that's the question, and I guess we'll have to go to Stockbridge, and we'll have to find out. This is Urban in Shelburne Falls. You're on.
Hey, Ray and Rich. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I love the show. You guys are just having so much fun. I figured I had to get involved. And here's my question. Last winter, we had a small flock of evening grosbeaks come into our feeder.
You're the man.
And they're just gorgeous birds. So unusual. They seem like they shouldn't even be from around here. And the problem is they seem to know how cool they are. They were in our yard one day, never came back ever again. So I want to know what kind of food you can put out to convince them that our yard is worth their time.
Well, good luck with that, because that's how they are.
Really?
Yeah, they are. They'll put in a show, they'll tease you to death, and then they'll move on. You know, they'll drop you like a hot potato. And you know, that's evening grosbeaks for you. If they do come, and some people, you know, worry that this might happen, is that they'll descend on you, and they will not give up on you.
What do you mean?
Well, they'll just eat you out of house and home.
Really?
You're going to have to triple your bird feeder budget when they show up and decide to move in. So sunflower seeds. They love sunflower seeds. That's
okay.
The ticket. Yeah, good luck.
Well, I'm glad to know it's not just me that they don't like.
No, I've had that happen with me.
It could be you, too, as well, though. I mean, we're not sure.
These are not one-night stands. They're one-day wonders.
All right, fair enough. Well, hey, listen, good luck. Enjoy the birds. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest here on Vox Pop. This email from Norma. I cleaned out the bluebird box after my regulars had two successful families. They are back, and they built another nest. Should I feed them through the winter?
Yeah, sure. But you know what? They probably won't accept what you have to, unless you have mealworms. Or you can crumble some suet and spread that about, but they have to discover it. If they don't find it, they won't know it's there. They won't discover it. So there's no way to entice them other than let one find it, and then the rest will follow. And yeah, sure, feed the bluebirds, but you don't need to. The best thing to do is to have natural native plants that produce berries or seeds that the birds can use through the winter. Sumac or winterberry, poison ivy, Those sorts of things work very well for
bluebirds. Now, how is it that we, if we brush against poison ivy, some of us worse than others, break out and itches, and birds can eat this stuff?
I guess it's just the way it works. You know, the rules are the rules. And birds and most mammals are not affected by poison ivy. Perhaps the fur and feathers protects them from the bare skin. And
interesting.
Yeah, but the berries are very nutritious for birds.
For birds. This one's from Nick. Just in the past few days, noticed some small birds that are silvery blue, grayish, makes a quick chirp whistle sound, and flies jumpily in packs. What might it be, and is it this time of year?
I'm going to say chirpily in flocks is going to sound like winter plumage goldfinches. And the name is gold, but they're nature's little alchemists. You know, right now they're just lead brown color, maybe dull green. But in the spring, they shine. They come out like the sunshine. And the other possibilities are some of the finches.
What about the one you told me about?
Yeah,
sounds like he was describing the same thing.
Okay. I'll go. What did I tell you?
I can't remember what
I can't
it was.
Either.
It looked like
but
a blue jay, but it was small, like a Carolina.
Oh, the titmouse.
Yeah, maybe that's
They have a jaunty flight. They are quite vocal when they feel like it, but they don't usually congregate. You know, they're a loose group, not a flock.
I'll tell you what, Rich. Kathleen in Woodstock wrote us in November when you were on, and we didn't get to it.
Oh.
And so she forwarded it over again. So here we go.
We're gonna
do it this time.
Okay.
This is from Kathleen. I've been enjoying phoebes or flycatchers, not sure which, nesting in the eaves around our house for 25 years. Every year they come back, and we usually have 2 to 5 nests around the house in the summer. We have had the occasional blue jay attack that wiped out a few nests, but only now and then. Early one morning this past summer, I heard distress calls. Looked out onto the back patio to find the small dead babies strewn everywhere, with a sparrow finishing off the last one. The parents hovered in distress but did not engage with the sparrow. They laid a second round of eggs that hatched and grew until they were almost ready to fly when the same thing happened. A sparrow knocked them all out, killed them. I came upon the scene at the end again. The nest was then abandoned midsummer. The phoebes left. How common is this? I read that sparrows are actually an invasive species that aggressively take over territory. Are the phoebes unlikely to return next year now that the sparrows seem to have moved in? I was very sad, and that's from Kathleen.
Yeah, this is sad. It is sad. And the house sparrow, what we used to call the English sparrow, they're notorious for this. They are. But I haven't heard of them going after phoebes so much. They do go after bluebirds and other whole nesting bird species, but the house sparrow will do that. It's kind of like, why? I mean, it's not like they're competition or anything like that, but that's how they are. And, the phoebes will come back. Let me say that.
Okay.
Rest assured, they'll be back. They'll try again, and let's hope that this time they're more successful.
All right, let's take a quick break. Rich Guthrie joins us. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. If you want to talk to Mr. Rich, he's got a list of things going on in our region. We'll check that next and then hit the phones for the home stretch. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. It's Birds on the Program. Number is 800-348-2551. Email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And Rich, what's going on out there?
Well, aside from the Christmas bird counts, which is the real big thing.
Autobahn.org.
Autobahn.org. Yes, look it up. And if you got a bird feeder within the count circle, each of those count circles, you're gold. We love you. And that's where I hope you'll find the green-tailed towhee and let us all know about it. We're keeping an eye out for them.
Why do you think that might be here?
Oh, it's probably here somewhere, but I'm only wishful thinking.
Okay.
It belongs in California, but, you know, we're looking for vagrants this time of year. The Christmas bird count seems to turn up one or two.
Yeah.
That's on my list.
All right, fair enough.
That's my Christmas wish list.
All right, sir.
There we go. So, gulls. You mentioned gulls earlier, and I might take offense on their behalf.
Really?
Yes, indeed. In fact, I put together, have an article with the Scenic Hudson's publication called The Viewfinder about gulls. It's just, and it's coming out Thursday. So
I don't like them. They take my hot dogs when I'm over at the place over by the lighthouse.
Hey, you know, do they say thank you anyway?
No, they do not.
Oh, well, maybe they'll come back and you don't want them to say thank you anyway. Right. So anyway, yeah, check out the gulls. scenichudson.org/viewfinder.
Okay.
Or you could be you can find out about it on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Twitter.
And LinkedIn.
LinkedIn.
scenichudson.org.
Well, they're on everything.
They're out there.
Wow.
Hey, and so are the
gulls.
The and that's
too?
What we're going to talk about gulls then.
Okay.
And then the other thing is if a little more exciting perhaps to some, and that's the Winter Raptor Surveys.
Oh, yeah.
New York State DEC, once again, is conducting overwinter raptor surveys in Greene County and in Montgomery County, New York. You want to find out about that, go to DEC Region 4 Wildlife in Schenectady. Contact them, and we'll sign you up and team you up with somebody. We'll take track of the hawks and owls, especially the northern harrier and the short-eared owl, among the other raptors that might be out there. And then one other thing, on Thursday evening, December 16th, I'll be doing a Zoom program for the Rensselaer Plateau Alliance. That's December 16th. And check it out at Rensselaer Plateau Alliance on Google them up, find out the details, and sign up and see you there.
You know, you have a reputation as something of an after-dinner speaker. Is this the first thing you've done since the COVID?
No. I did a couple of other ones. You know, and these are fun things. I just love doing them.
No, and but they're all Zoom right now, right?
Right now they're Zoom.
WebEx.
I don't remember. I've done any live ones. Maybe I did. I forget.
One of these days, Rich Guthrie is our guest today. Just one or two quick emails, and then hit the phones for the home stretch. Our buddy Marjorie in Saugerty says, regarding the suet, grocery stores sell raw suet, big chunks hung in old woven onion bags. Works great. Taken in at night until the bears are hibernating, and that's from Marjorie.
I love doing that.
Oh, yeah, your mic. I think you might have shut your mic off. Let's try.
We're on now.
Okay, that's fair enough.
There we go. I love doing that. The old onion bag with the suet in it, a good way to make it happen.
Yeah. All right, this is a picture. Now, once again, I love it when people send pictures, and this is a great picture, but no one can see it but Rich. And isn't that nice? I'll read the text in a moment. You turned your mic off again.
Did I really?
Oh, no,
I'm on.
No,
I just okay. Speechless.
This is from Pat. This owl ended up in my grandson's soccer net in his yard in Milford, Massachusetts, two Saturdays ago. It was stuck. A wing seemed injured, so they called the animal control officer who came in, freed it, had to cut the net, which my grandson was not happy about. But I guess everything is a happy ending there.
Yeah, well, good. It looks like a great horned owl in that picture.
That's a beautiful owl.
It is. Oh, and speaking of which, by the way, great horned owls are now setting up their nesting territory. It is December, but they'll be setting up their territories. I just saw one the other day from the interstate highway in Albany, New York. So,
really?
By one of the parks. So they're out there. They're just so the breeding. Atlas Project is coming up again, and it's not too soon to start.
Well, this is really something, and I was going to go to the phones until I saw this email come in from a WAMC alum.
Mm-hmm.
My old friend Colin, who's in Chicago.
Hey.
He used to be an engineer here 100 years ago. Colin writes, longtime listener, first time email. I don't know if you help me. I live in downtown Chicago on the 20th floor in a high rise. Just the other day, my son started yelling, Daddy, look, a big bird. I look over and a bald eagle is sitting on my balcony. There have been similar sightings reported by friends throughout the city. Normally, I see them in the summertime up in Wisconsin or Michigan. Do eagles normally migrate to denser populated areas during the winter? And would I, should I, what should I do when they come back?
Enjoy them. And yes, the eagles... You know, they kind of command the sky, and they go where they want to. And a city, to them, is not that much different than a rocky hillside. The buildings are cliff faces. So that's not going to deter them. If there's food, they will come.
And Colin, your punctuation and syntax are terrible. I did the best I could. But some things don't change.
Well, there you go. It worked out well.
Indeed.
What a team.
Isn't that great? The number here is 800-348-2551, and we go to Shelburne Falls. Lynn, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Good. Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about, generally I hear the barred owls in the spring doing their hooting at night, and this couple days ago, I think you may have mentioned about the great horned owl. It could have been that. But this time of year, I was kind of surprised to hear anything.
Well, it could be either. Both owls, the great horned and the barred owl, are setting up their winter territories. And the great horned owl is actually setting up its breeding territory at the same time. So they need to boot the kids out, send them packing. And they do that by hooting back and forth. This is how they set up the rules. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
And just to,
well, thank
to
you
clarify,
very much.
Yeah, the great horned owl has a call that goes like this. Hoo, hoo, hoo.
Like that?
Well, yeah, come on. Try it again. Beginning to sound like the Bronx Zoo here.
All right, fair enough.
And the barred owl has a very distinctive call of its own.
Yeah, can we hear that?
Yeah. So you can tell the difference just by the tempo, the sequence, and the phrasing of their hoots.
Okay. Fair enough. By the way, I feel terrible. I made a joke at Colin's expense. His spelling isn't that bad.
Oh.
The grammar and the punctuation is awful, but the spelling was okay.
I wasn't offended. I thought you helped.
Well, Colin might be offended out in Chicago.
He's a tough
guy.
He
worked here for a long time.
He's a tough guy. He knows you.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to Mark in Reedsboro. Hello, Mark. You're on.
Hello. Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I grew up in the country, and, you know, I've always been interested in birds and nature and things, and I still am. I'm 62. And I also have a rock, mineral, and fossil business.
Cool.
At one discussion, these combined with the question about a carrier pigeon or, you know, having a magnetic piece of lodestone or something in their forehead to keep them on track with compasses. Have you heard anything like that?
Yes, as a matter of fact. And that not only the pigeons, but also not only the carrier pigeons, but many birds, it is believed to have this physiological feature that enables them to navigate using geomagnetic forces, and which is how they get back home. For the homing pigeon.
So interesting.
And for the swallow and the robin and the oriole. So there is that out there, which is interesting because some of them can be thrown off by high-powered electric tension wires.
Right.
That cast a magnetic field overhead. And also it's believed that the trout, salmon, and other fishes like eels have a similar feature that enable
amazing.
Them to navigate back home.
So as the poles shift, and we think it might be starting, these birds will be bollocksed up. Magnetic pole, not the Earth flipping, Rich, but every X number of years, whether it's millions or hundreds of thousands, the pole, the North and South Pole switch.
Yeah, they're going to have to either cross that bridge when they come to it, learn new rules, or what have you. But what's interesting, the magnetic pole is migrating around the northern hemisphere.
Yeah.
And right now, it's someplace towards Siberia.
Right.
And I haven't seen any work done on that, whether or not there's been a coincidental shift in population distribution, but I wouldn't be surprised if there is something that evidence in that field.
Mark, you want to follow up real quick?
No, that's just that verified our conversation. I'm happy to know that, you know, it is a true thing.
It is. And
thank you.
Thanks,
I forget his name right now, but a doctor in Cornell University did this years ago by actually imposing a magnet on the birds themselves and watched how confused they became. That was one of the first studies that showed evidence of this phenomenon.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Email address is voxpop@wamc.org. You know what that bird is, Rich?
Oh.
There's a dead bird somebody took a picture of in Niskayuna. No.
There's no scale of size to it, and it's upside down.
It's clearly a napkin. It's a small bird.
Yeah. It looks like one of the warblers, and it's probably something that flew into a window.
Yeah, that's what he said. It was dead beside my house in Niskayuna.
Yeah.
Unique shade of green in spots. I've never seen this species around here.
It looked like a vireo of some sort, probably a red-eye vireo, which is very unfortunate. And I presume it happened sometime last fall or not.
Well, he just emailed. It doesn't say.
Yeah, that's not a winter bird around here. And
all right, well, maybe Tom will follow up from Niskayuna for the next show.
Yep, sounds good.
Number here is 800-348-2551. Lois in Mount Kisco. Lois, you're on.
Hi there. I have a quick question. We love birds, and birds have sort of deserted us. We have squirrels on our property. We do not like bird feeders. Is there any way we can attract birds without using a bird feeder and something the squirrels would avoid or not like the food or whatever it is?
Well, I would go with the, a little late for this time of year, but planting native plants, winterberry or sumac or some of the other berry-producing, food-producing, overwintering plants. Crabapple is a wonderful, wonderful option. The other thing is that you can get sprigs of plants that have the fruit still on them. That you can hang out there. I would recommend staying away from bittersweet, but some of the other plants still have fruits
on
them. Why? Well, because it's one of those, bittersweet has taken over the environment.
It's invasive?
Oh, it's invasive. It's very aggressive. Okay. And they're actually destroying a lot of our woodland.
We have a lot of shade, so hardly anything grows. Is there anything I can buy other than sprigs and all that I could buy that would attract the birds and the squirrels would not be interested in?
Well, there are bird feeders out there that will cater to the birds and deter the squirrels. Some of them use little platforms that the squirrel's weight will close the feeding mechanism. And other ones have openings that are too small, like a cage that's too small for the squirrel to get into.
Do you have bran that's easy to clean?
I hate
cleaning them. We've had them before. I hate cleaning the bird feeders.
Yeah, I don't blame you. In the wintertime, cleaning is an issue, but it's not something in the wintertime that you need to be too overly concerned with. Periodically, for sure, but not like in the summertime where there'll be a lot of fermenting going on.
Okay. Right. Is there anything I can throw on the ground or something that the squirrels won't love and the birds will love?
That's a good question. You can put cayenne pepper in some of the bird seed and mix it in and put cayenne pepper out there. I've not tried that, but I've heard that this is something that the squirrels do not like. They'll stay away because it burns their lips.
Yeah.
And the birds, no sensation at all.
No lips.
No lips, and it doesn't. They don't sense it. So.
And what kind of bird food should I buy? Because I haven't done it in quite a while.
I would stick with black oil sunflower seed and perhaps cracked corn and millet. Go with those three. And suet and...
That's four.
And that's all.
Okay.
Yeah, don't go beyond that. And don't buy the stuff off the shelf in the supermarket or the hardware store. It's usually full of red millet, and that's usually left behind by the birds. Waste of money.
So can you repeat what you just said? I couldn't write fast enough. Black oil sunflower.
Cayenne pepper and sunflower seed, cracked corn and white millet and safflower hearts, that sort of thing are the favorites among birds.
And where do I buy it if I don't get it where you just said?
I would recommend in a reputable feed store.
Oh, there's got to be a bird store in Bedford or Mount Kisco or Chap, one of those places
there. There are a garden shop that has, that won't sell you the cheap stuff that I don't know why they even package the cheap stuff. It's almost, why
well,
bother?
And Lois, thanks for the call. In due respect, Rich, I was at the grocery store just a couple of days ago. A nice lady was checking out ahead of me, and she had a bag of bird feed. I looked at it, and it looked fabulous.
It looked to you, perhaps, and
to her. Yeah, it looked great. I wanted some.
Yeah, well, but the problem is that many of those things are just filled with wheat and chaff, and the birds just don't go for it. And so you end up with frustration. You're spending money. You're trying to feed the birds, and they don't take it.
She looked pretty relaxed, man.
Yeah, well, so let's go you to get what you pay for.
Let's go to Sheila in Belchertown. Sheila, you're on.
Hi. I've seen a red-winged blackbird twice at my theater this past week, and I do live in a swampy area, but it's frozen over, and I've never seen them this late in the season.
Well, usually you're right about that. They're gone. I mean, they up and go back in October and November. But you're not the only one. There, a few of them will hang out, and that's one of the birds that we look for on our Christmas bird count, because over time we may be seeing a trend where those lingering birds are increasing in numbers, and that's the sort of trending line that we keep monitor.
Uh-huh.
So good job on the red-winged blackbird.
Sheila, thanks a lot. Now we have 1 minute and change left. Let's go to Nancy in Cummington. Nancy, you're on.
Yes. I've seen this bird a couple of times in my yard, in the driveway or on the dirt road, and it's very light silvery, kind of, well, I wouldn't say silvery, but very light colored. And I'm looking in Peterson's, and I think maybe it's a snow bunting. Could that be possible?
Oh, sure. This time of year, snow buntings come down from the Arctic, and they're wonderful. They're like big, they're flying snowflakes. They're beautiful birds.
Oh,
they're so beautiful. And they're like in little bunches of, you know, just a half a dozen or four.
That's how they hang out, yes. Well, and when they fly, they just flash this white. They look like snow crystals.
So Nancy should be part of the Christmas bird count, and then she could count those, right?
Oh, we'd love to have that counted on a, yes.
Once again, Ridge, thanks, Nancy. Once again, how do people find out about the Christmas bird count?
Audubon.org. Go there and check out the circle. Go to the map.
Now, I understand that you would like to give a little address here, and you have last 20 seconds to do so.
Yeah, here we go. Listen to this, man.
All right.
I heard a bird sing in the dark of December, a magical thing, so sweet to remember. We are nearer to spring than we were in September. I heard a bird sing in the dark of December.
I like it.
Isn't that
did you write that yourself?
Uplifting.
Who wrote that?
That was Oliver Herford.
Ah, the great Oliver Herford.
And thank you, Patty Hayes, for pitching that towards me.
By the way, the last thing I want to tell you, Elizabeth wrote from Northampton, I wish Rich Guthrie would write a book. That's it.
Me too.
Why don't you write one?
I'm working on it.
Are you really?
Well, no.
Can I be in it?
Yeah. Ready? If I get you spelling your name right.
You know what? It'll cost you. Hey, thanks for being here, Rich. We'll see you next time, all right?
Thank you, Ray.
Support comes from Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume and cover letter writing, accepting new clients. Careers in Transition, LLC.com. Michael Hunter, Hudson, New York, and Edgartown, Massachusetts, offering an eclectic selection of artisanal designer fashion and fine jewelry for men and women, M-I-K-E-L, Hunter.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College presenting the exhibition Sarah Kane, Enter the Center. Add more through Sunday, December 19th, skidmore.edu/tang. And Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services at a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, boydenandperrin.com. Be with us tomorrow on the program. Audrey Kupferberg will join us, and we'll talk about her favorite holiday movies of all time and yours. I'll talk about the ones I hate the most. It's tomorrow at 2. Stand by now for the book show.